here. If I recollection, it was near a path.
Yeah, that's what I thought as
yeah.
well.
And I think it was just one in.
This documentary starts at the end, in the graveyard. His graveyard. The last time I go yeah. there, it's over.
There you are.
Yeah.
Come. Do you want to have a look?
Okay, go Chloe.
Yeah.
I'm Liz Marie Stanley. Last year I was Elizabeth, 45-year-old Elizabeth, the fat woman, 23-stone Elizabeth, who could hardly walk. Panpipe music makes me feel happy, relaxed, at peace with myself, the way I finally am now. June 2006, you asked me, Ella, to describe myself.
I'd say like a barrel, small and stout and round. It's the best way. I'm only 4'10". I have shoulder length dark brown hair. I have hazel eyes. I have a round face. I have a young complexion, so I'm told. People tell me I don't look 45. I'd be small and stout. Sometimes you'd wonder where my legs are, but that's it.
How would you describe your body?
It's all in the one proportion, big. I'd be described, probably basically by men, we'd be called voluptuous because I've got a big bust and they don't talk to me, they talk to your bust. I don't have a waist. I wouldn't know what it was like to have a waist. Bust is big, stomach is big, everything is big. The only part of me that isn't big are my arms. That'd be it, a barrel, you know, small, stout, round. You know, that way.
If you saw yourself walking down the street, what would you think?
Well, from the top path, from my bust up, people would probably say, that's a nice looking girl, it's a pity that she's so big. I'd say from the bust down, forget about it, from the bust up, yes, nice features. So I've been told. And so I've learned to accept the compliments that people have given when they say, I've got nice skin and I've got nice teeth and I've got nice hair. So I take the compliments now because I know that much about me is correct.
What's your favourite part of yourself?
I would say probably my skin and my eyes. They're green eyes, they're hazel eyes. They're not the best eyes medically, so I'm told. I think they're very expressive would be the word. That people can tell a lot when they look at me, when they look into my eyes. They can tell a lot.
What's the least favourite part of your body?
Oh, it has to be my stomach. Stomach and my bust. It's very, very hard to get a bra for somebody that has as big a size as me and be comfortable. Way down the alphabet in terms of girls and sizes. I'd be about 44 double D. Sometimes that can go up depending on the weight. When it fluctuates, it can be 48 double D. So that's bigger than all these paid models that are making a fortune. The stomach just constantly looks as if I'm pregnant. And I think I've probably been pregnant since I was about 9, as far as certain people are concerned, because it's always been there. It's been part of me. It goes up and down. It fluctuates. It can go from, you know, looking really, really big to looking that I've lost weight. Or for certain occasions, like I remember my brother's confirmation, I lost quite a lot of weight and I looked different. And it was different when I got married, you know, the way, because I did do my best to try and lose as much. But it's always been there. It's always been big. It's always been part of me. But it's as hard as a rock from probably all the rubbish that goes in and out through it. No matter what you put in to do to dissolve the weight around it, it just doesn't move. You know, it's the same as if you go anywhere, even out for a meal, and that would be one of the things I would be conscious of, because you go into a restaurant and you've got to say, right, is there enough space between your stomach and the edge of the table where you've got to sit, or can you pull the chair back enough and there's still room for your stomach to be comfortable? Because the last thing you want when you're going for a meal is for your stomach to be jammed up against the table and you're going to feel, you know, full after eating. So when you stand up, you've got to get yourself up, and then you've got to kind of get your little stomach up as well. Well, in my case, your big stomach up. You've got to get it up with you as you go.
Have a stay in here.
No,
I'm
not. Ready? Just give us a shout when you go.
You're going to paint that back on them. There's a lot of little patches here and there. It needs a little coat. In one day.
That's Kevin, my husband of 3 years. Without Kevin, I'd still be Elizabeth, the fat woman.
Well,
I don't know. There's an ESB pole out there that's in the middle
they
of the road.
They could be moving the ESB pole.
Could be that, you know, that way. But we
further across to make room for the road to go down.
I suppose they're lucky they told us that they were going to do it. But,
A small little person trying to get a drink in a bar. That's what I remember. She couldn't reach. She couldn't look up. She was even smaller than the bar. She couldn't reach up. So I was getting a drink. And I went over and said, well, I ordered you a drink. Good laugh. A good joke and good laugh. Very easy to get on with. Very, very easy to get on with. Like I knew her for years. You know, that way we could talk about anything. But she knew she was heavy and she was weight, but she couldn't lose it. No matter what she did, she couldn't lose the weight. It didn't affect me. It never bothered me. Like, you know what I mean? I didn't care less. People stare at her, you just stare back at them. That's the best way. You know what I mean?
People staring at her?
At Liz, yeah. You know, in the shops and stuff like that, because she's big. If they did that, I'd always just stare back at them like that. And they always just look away. But that's, to me, it's just people being ignorant. Like, you know what I mean? That's all.
Can you understand why she was so overweight in the first place?
Well, I'd say to do her a pass with the abuse. Because I knew that from the very start. She told me that, probably the second day I met her, she told me everything. You know what I mean? So that's being her, obviously, but not really, they're very frank. There was something wrong. I'd say it. Told me about years ago. She got abused by this. Don't know his name anyway. Don't want to know him. So I reckon that was to do with the weight, like, you know what I mean? Definitely. Probably was comfort eating, I'd say, you know. Now, we don't really talk much about him anyway, you know what I mean? But we do talk about him, but not much. Because I don't want to say what I think about him, you know what I mean? On air. I've nothing to do with him anyway. I'm not really a religious man now, but I've nothing to do with the Catholic Church, you know. That's all.
Things are difficult when you're 4'10" and 23 stone. 4'10", 23 stone.
Well, one, even just before I even wake up, I could have been tossing and turning all night with the weight, trying to get a comfortable position, trying having the arthritis in the neck and your knees, and you're trying to move into a comfortable position to lie in bed. Whereas a lot of people would give anything for the luxury of being able to stay in bed. I'm the opposite. I have to get up and I've got to move around because the arthritis, which is, you know, in my case, because of the weight, it's very, very hard then getting up in the morning. And then you've got to sit. I've literally got to sit at the edge of the bed for 5 or 10 minutes and try and stretch to actually move your, just the top half of me, basically, like your hands, neck, to unhinge, I think was the word that you would use. And then be able to get myself to stand up to try and get myself into the shower. That means walking around the bed and you're holding on like a baby that's only learning how to walk. It could take me, you know, about 5 minutes just to get as far as the bathroom to get into the shower. And I say shower because I can't get into the bath, because I can't lift my legs, my knees to get in the bath. And then if I get that far, I can't get back out again because they just stiffen up. So it's the shower. But even to get into my own shower, which is grand, it's just a walk-in shower, but it's got a big, huge step. So if you're trying to get into the shower, it's again, you know, I'm great at counting when it comes to your stomach and the arthritis. It's 1, 2, 3, lift your leg, lift your knee. Other things, even simple little things like, you know, without being rude, going to the toilet, trying to wipe your backside, even to do that. To do that motion of even moving your hands hurts. So it's, you know, you can be constant.
How easy is it to go to the toilet?
Oh, I can go to the toilet. It's actually cleaning yourself up afterwards is very, very hard. Especially if you've gone to the toilet and you've done a feces, you're trying to clean yourself up, and it's basically trying to clean your backside. It's very, very hard. So I've got to kind of develop my own method and I'm being very, you know, descriptive here, is that I might have to use a towel sometimes because it's longer, and then you wash yourself and then you wash your towels and you wash everything. If I'm going somewhere, I've got to make sure I haven't eaten something that will make me go to the loo, for that reason, because it's, you can't do your own personal toiletry. So obviously, again, you watch what you're eating as well. You watch where you go. It restricts your going out, where you go, who you visit. You only go to houses where you know that, you know, they either have a downstairs toilet or they have a toilet that you know that you can, you know, spend some time, or the people themselves that you know that's okay. If you're in the bathroom for half an hour, they're not going to come looking for you, you know, that way, and ask you what you're up to, you know. And in the very beginning, you know, probably when myself and Kevin you know, first got together, got married. You have to explain this to him. You know, they say, you know, in, you know, that you, your vows are in sickness and in health or in all kinds of conditions. And by God, has there been certain conditions, you know, that way that you just would have to ask, you know, for help.
Is it difficult for you to see yourself naked?
It's like, yeah, for me it would be if you do that side version, you stand and you try and see what you are, just see this, all you see is this stomach. Yeah, it can be very hard, you know. So I think it's just a normal everyday issue in Ireland. Women, they don't want to see their body, or no matter what you do with your body, you'd still want something else to be different.
What do you call this? A terraced? It's a terraced house in a big street, you know what I mean? My mum and dad have lived here now for 40 years. Up to 10 years ago, I lived here all my life, with the exception of when I was 6 months, I lived in Finglas, and I've never lived anywhere else, you know. See what key. It's one of the criteria for this house, you have to have a key. We all have our own keys, even though we're all married. And
how are you?
Cold.
Good. Yeah, well, the heat's on since. I didn't put it on till about...
That's my mum, Lily. Lily from Coolock.
Because I was
trying
doing
to
bits and pieces around the place, like, you know, so I didn't need to. I meant to turn that off. I was doing crosswords there, catching up. And last night I was out with Elizabeth, and I was my best friend across the road, Anne, you know.
Your mother always calls me Elizabeth.
Yeah. Well, it's hard.
As she said, you paid 25...
Well, I remember going to school. I enjoyed school. Even in my later days, I enjoyed going to school. Probably my early days would be my Holy Communion, which, when you think about it nowadays, kids are 9 when they make their Holy Communion, whereas I made mine when I was 6. Very posh when you think of it now. It was broad-dressed on lace. It was all lace and a blue coat. And for want of a better word, a donut perched on the top of my head, because it was just a round headdress with a very plain veil. And black shoes, patent leather shoes that went across, that would be very in today. They were pointed black shoes that absolutely killed me.
If you walked in today, a 6-year-old, into this kitchen, what would you see? What kind of person?
As a 6-year-old, I was probably a bossy 6-year-old in that I was the eldest of all our family. But I think definitely a very happy child in that sense. Before everything, the different things in my life that happened, that they were going to, you know, have such an impact on my life. Probably small, tubby 6-year-old. You know, when I look at my school photographs, like, you know, I would probably have been, you know, bigger than anybody in my class in that sense.
And back then, can you remember your favourite food?
Chicken and pork. And today they're probably the only meats that I eat now. But they would be roast chicken dinner on a Sunday. But for me, without the potatoes, I hate potatoes. No, chicken would be my favourite food. If I was going to buy something out of pocket money or anything like that, I always bought crisps. I always bought savoury things. Crisps, anything to do with, I suppose, the salt in them. That would be what I would have gone for then. Or when we used to get our pocket money, like, you know, 2.5 pence in them days, and you could buy so many things out of that. Buy a bar of chocolate. You know, to Dairy Milk, which is now actually coming back. Children can buy the bar that we got, and you'd get a bag of sweets, and you'd still have money left maybe for the next week. But I didn't buy sweets normally out of them. I bought crisps, you know, certain brand of crisps that was out them days, you know, that way, which are, you know, extinct nowadays, you know, that way.
What was it?
Perry crisps. They were very, very I think it's the taste of salt on them, you know, the type of... But it might have been whatever they were cooked in them days, whatever oils they were cooked in, but it wasn't a big issue growing up, like, as a kid, so, you know what I mean, food in that sense. I think it would probably be more teenage years that it became, as I now know, an issue, you know, that type of way.
Well, This is our bedroom. It's a lovely red and cream, very relaxing colours. And the rest of that is just our, you know, again, family photographs, little pictures with my sister, my baby brother. Well, he's not a baby anymore because he's 36, and this photograph here is actually
with my mum and my granddad and my brother, and it's one of my favourite pictures because I actually don't look overweight in it, and as you can see, I've got a big bow on my hair.
What do you mean you don't look overweight?
Well, I mean, you can look overweight as you're growing up, you know, that type of way, but I think it's because I have a dress on in that picture, I don't actually look overweight in it.
What's that over there?
That's a certificate for my Holy Communion. I made my Holy Communion on the 2nd of December, 1967. So, like, as donkey's years.
Well, in them, didn't when we were growing up, you know, when I was 8 or 9. I mean, we always went to Mass together as a family. And we'd always sit in the same seat on a Sunday. And to this day, my mum still sits in the same seat. But we were like, you know, the Von Trapp family, you know, traipsing down to Mass. The six of us and Mum and Dad. And like I say, it was fine in the early days till this priest came to the parish.
Who was he?
He was like an ogre. He was like a giant. He was a very, very tall man. Very, very obese. With glasses. Light hair. Always wore a top hat. You know, we would have been considered, you know, well, in terms now, a Christian family. You know, we went to Mass. We helped out in the community. We did our bit. I even, you know, at them days used to collect the church collection. So we would be well known in the parish and well known in the church to the priests that were there. And then this particular priest came as the parish priest for the diocese.
Can you remember the first time you met him? You saw him?
Well, he just came on a Sunday Mass one day, and he was just introduced as the new parish priest and his name. And he came across as a very jolly, likeable person and seemed to really like, you know, being around children and talking to children. And, you know, out on a walk, he would go to meet, you know, people and talk to them. He felt he was being, in them days, you know, being involved in his parish. We'd, you know, individually and as a family would have been invited to go up to his house, and, you know, to be even invited to the parochial house was a big thing. Like, you were in with the parish priest, you were in with the person that had a lot of, you know, power in the area, that was looked on as an honour, to be even invited up to the parochial house. That, you know, you must have been a good Catholic, for want of a better word, you must have been a good Catholic in them days to be invited. And then that was it. I was invited up to the house. Like, we'd always been invited, but he had made us, you know, a particular kind of invitation that I was allowed to go up whenever, or as they called me then, you know, Elizabeth.
What would you do?
You just literally go in and you would have a cup of tea, and, you know, for us, you know, that maybe we'd only have treats and goodies on a Sunday. Like, it was big fancy cakes and big fancy, you know, chocolate biscuits and all that done out of china cups. You know, and it's funny, to this day, I hate china cups and I hate the feel of them. I hate everything to do with china cups.
How old are you?
I was 10.
I can take you there to his house, the old man who abused me when I was 10. It's the last time I'll go there. It's over. We're about, I'd say, about 5 minutes away from my parents' house, at the back of... basically at the back of where I lived. At the time, though, there was no houses in front of it. I could have looked out my back window and seen the place where I was abused, but now you can't because all houses built. It was just an all glass door, not even the door that's there. The housekeeper would open the door and you would be led into the which is, I think, the sitting room. She'd bring in tea, he'd come in, and then that was basically it, you know. He'd lock the door. Had two in the room that were standing looking at, you know, the sitting room. They had two interconnecting doors, like slide doors, and he would then just close them, and, you know, all pleasantries, a cup of tea, or, you know, in my case, I drank water then, and then 2 minutes into it, and then it would be the usual, start the routine again.
With difficult hips, with difficulty sitting even anywhere, and then asked to sit on this person's lap, knee, for whatever word you want to do. So you'd be perched on the edge, just absolutely petrified that I was going to fall off. And then it literally inappropriate. The abuse started then. I didn't question why he said it. He just said he wanted to, you know, talk to you. He wanted to be near you when he was talking to you. To be honest with you, he didn't. He smelt of sweat because he was a big, fat person, for want of a better word. To be honest with you, used to make my stomach sick. Because he had a skin condition, which I think now would be called psoriasis, you know, that way, flaky skin and all that. And he was just, ugh, the hardness, the roughness of his hands even. The best way to describe it is you could hear his heart beating. And then as you were trying to hold on, he said, it's all right, hold my hand, you won't fall off. But the memory is like if somebody is shaking your hand and then they squeeze your hand. So you have got this hand digging into your hand and this rough, scaly skin. And I have to say to this day, they would be my horrible memories for me, in the sense, the feel of the skin, the roughness of the skin. I mean, my poor mum, she didn't know that she was sending me into the likes of this, somebody that was going to later abuse. She thought you were okay with a parish priest. She trusted, you know, that was it. You trusted parish priests in them days with your life. Pinching my nipples. He would say, oh, it's okay, and he would give me a kiss on the forehead and then attempt to kiss me on the lips. And then it got worse from there. And I did actually say, you know, quite a few times, stop that, you shouldn't be doing this, and stop it. And he said, oh, trust me. And anyway, if you, and I, you know, would say what any 10-year-old child would say, I'm going to tell my mum on you. And he was saying, oh, they won't believe you if you tell them. I had the disadvantage in it that I've got a photographic memory, so when I'm describing this, despite the fact I'm sitting in my kitchen, I'm actually in that house. Sorry, I can see it so clear. It's like being back there again.
Let's take a break.
I was 28 years old when I left my parents' home into a flat of my own. I was alone, alone with food.
I could buy what I wanted. I could eat. There was nobody there to tell me, you can't have this, you can't have that. You know, when you think about it, really, I've only been with three men. And it'd be in that times when you were sitting on a Saturday night where I lived, you could see out onto the main roads. You see couples going out at night time. You want to be the same as everybody else. So what do? You reach and you have some sweets, crisps, order a curry, order a pizza, and you sit and you comfort yourself and say, oh, to hell with it. You know, you're not going out on a Saturday night. So in my case, it was, oh, I'll have a pizza, I'll have a... Or we lived near the chipper, fish and chips, things I don't, you know, chips, potatoes, I don't even know, but just for the sake of going and getting them. And that you, I would comfort myself and say, oh, here, I'll have this on a Saturday night. When you were being made to feel different to everybody else, you say, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, because it did for a few years, saying, oh, I'm big anyway. I'll just eat what I want and it won't make any difference because nobody's going to go near me anyway. At 28, when I revealed that I had been abused, I was only 14 stone. And now, as a just approaching 45-year-old woman, and about to go and have this operation, I am 23 stone, and that is the heaviest I have ever been, ever. And I got heavier as I had told about the abuse.
And you say you'd eat it because it would be like a comfort.
Yeah.
Why do you use the word comfort?
Because it made me feel good, because it knew that it was something that I could have and I liked. It was like a rebelling about against everybody that said to you, you can't. Whereas when I moved out, it was, I can. Who's here to tell me not to? It's my money I'm using. It's my spend. I can do what I want with. And because I hadn't been with any man, or because anybody that I met was saying, yeah, Liz, you're a lovely person, nice to talk to, great crack. Yeah, but it's a pity about the weight.
What kind of things would you eat?
And then it was curries, things I don't even, wouldn't be 100% even fond of, that crisps, and you're talking about, can sit with a six pack, eat the whole lot of them, go down and get to the shops, do your messages, get something else, not the same crisps, but every other type of crisp or whatever flavour that it, of different other type of crisp, the ones that had salt content in it, take them and eat them.
And what would be, if you can remember, a typical sort of binge almost, what would it start off with?
It would start off with maybe order a curry. You might have some sweets in the fridge. They weren't supposed to be for me. It would be for visitors or anything. Have them. Eat biscuits, things that I never liked. And still to this day do not like biscuits and all that. But just because you're sitting there, maybe nothing to do, eat. Or eat biscuits for a spot. Then go and buy, you know, you have a couple of packages of crisps there. A six pack. Like I'm talking about like 2 6 packs. And eat as much of them till they got to the stage that you're full. It was always, again, when you're on your own and when you're at home. When I'd be in college and when I'd be with people, or if there was even people in the house, I wouldn't eat the crisps. Half the time I was just eating them. You didn't know why you were eating them. You were just eating them because they were there, or because you were after buying them, or you'd see something, or you'd hear something, or you'd be told something again. And it would be, oh, I don't care, let's eat the crisps. Or somebody would say something to you. Go down to the shop and get crisps. And when I came back, I'd feel better.
Would you relax?
Yeah. I'd feel better after having them. That first bite of that crisp and the taste, the flavour of it, would be absolutely ecstasy because you were eating a package of crisps. Just that whole sensation of eating it. Pure heaven. You know the way? It's like being thirsty and you know that you have to get a drink of water. And that first sip of that cool water is just takes everything away, the discomfort and everything that you're after being feeling when you get that sip of water. So to eat them crisps after having a bad day was just pure heaven.
What would be the point where you'd say, oh, that's enough?
The point where you're nearly physically sick after eating so many packages of crisps. You know, when you physically feel that your stomach can't take any more and that you may actually get sick by it. But I mean, I got to the stage that I asked them in the shop not to serve me crisps. And I told the people where I was working. I was, you know, administrator, receptionist in a part where there was loads of different people that worked in the building. And I asked them that if they saw me ever going into the shop, to point out or say, oh, you're not allowed crisps. Make a thing out of it so that I'd be so embarrassed by buying the crisps that I wouldn't buy them. Back to the graveyard, Glasnevin graveyard. Another priest, our family friend, Father Mick Cullen, he helped me trace where my abuser was buried.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that, I mean, you're blessed with the family you have at home. I mean, mother and father and the rest of them, they were all very, very supportive throughout, you know. Even towards helping you make the first step.
Oh, yeah. What did you know about this priest?
I never met him, I think. I may have met him, but certainly he wasn't somebody that I would have... I have no recollection of ever having a conversation with him. He's a good bit older than me, Liz, I think.
He was an old man when I first was introduced to him, so, you know, he was...
Yeah, I mean, I'd have known his name all right, you know, but I'm sure I would have I met him at some stage, you know, it's inevitable. Maybe at retreats or something like that, but I really wouldn't have known him.
Were you surprised about what they said?
No, I wasn't, because at that stage it really came at the head of, was it the Brendan Smith or was one of them? I know I got up in the pulpit and I just said, look, it's time to put up our hands and, you know, get this sorted. And Lily approached me the following Sunday, I'd say, or maybe the same Sunday.
That's right,
the start of it.
Mick had given a sermon on the whole Brendan Smith case, and that, you know, that everybody wasn't like that, and that, you know, this church's sympathies for what had happened to abuse victims. And I was really touched by what he said, because he was saying that, you know, much as he was a priest himself, that, you know, that they had to stand up and be counted for what, you know, priests in the past have done to people. And I was touched by that and said it to my mother, and Mum took it from there, you know, that way. I wanted to talk to Mick and have a chat with him about what his sermon that he had given.
Does it matter to you that he wasn't counted, if you like, that he wasn't punished, or does that not matter to you?
Oh, it would. I'd say, had he still been alive by the time that I even decided to deal with it, I mightn't been as quiet or as reserved as I am. I probably would have
what I feel in my heart and soul is that I probably would have done time for him. That's enough of that. It's all over now. It was me who turned to food. Nobody forced it into my mouth. My doctor told me I was going to die unless I lost weight. So I did it. June 2006, a week before my gastric bypass operation in Leeds, my last supper, time to say goodbye to Elizabeth.
I had everything. I had a big binge. And I'm not just talking about, like, you know, crisps. I'm talking about as if I was eating for, as if I was up to be executed. My last meal.
What was it?
Everything. I had chocolate, which I don't even eat. I ate Maltesers and I ate a big bar of fruit and nut. And I'm talking about the big, huge 2 euro bar, a big, huge bar of that. I had cream cakes, which I don't like because I don't like cakes and biscuits.
How many?
Just 2 donuts, 1 cream cake and 1 donut. For my dinner, I had big portions of meat. For my afters, I had ice cream and I had a Magnum. I had a thing of ice cream with peaches and then I had an ice cream. And I was having a beauty session that night with some of the girls from the road and I was having facials and all that. And I was the last one to be done and this is about 10:30. I had promised myself that I was getting a curry because of what we weren't going to ever have a curry again. Now, myself and Kevin would only have a curry once a month, but I knew that I wasn't going to get anything like this. But that night I had a curry, but I had duck as well. That was it. It was just like the last thing. And I actually had bought a 6 package of crisps. I only ate 3 packages. And, excuse me, the next day that I came down was the first day of the detox. And there's the 3 packages of crisps there. And I got them, I put them in a black bag and I danced on them. And that was it.
Tell me about the operation.
The operation basically is called a gastric bypass. It's where they make like a new intestine, a new stomach, and that they make a sac, they put a elastic band in. You'll only be able to take small amounts of food. And obviously the weight will go.
July 2006, back from Leeds, operation over, 4 foot 10 inches, 22 stone.
Just before tea time, as they call it, the surgeon himself came in to see me and just went back over everything, the procedure and what it would meant, and you know, the outline of what was going to happen, which was that in a half an hour then I was going to have my last meal, which I had thought I was from 12 o'clock in the daytime, but it wasn't. It was 12 o'clock that night, so it meant I was able to have a lovely 4 course, and I'm talking about like luxury meal, but all done with low fat foods and all that.
What was your last meal?
My last meal was cucumber soup, which I'd never tried, but I love to try all different things. Breast of duck done in an orange and cream sauce with little mint baby potatoes and broad beans, and then a big homemade trifle. Everything was made with low calorie, everything, you know, that way. So that was an extra treat because I thought I was, you know, fasting from 12 o'clock that day, but I wasn't. And then the next day was the day for the operation. They said that I had to be up for 6 o'clock and be showered and washed and all that. It took longer than they expected. They weren't sure how they were going to get in at certain areas, because of the wads of fat and all that, but it took about 2 hours more than they thought. Them being that they promised me that I would have it done then, and that's exactly what they did. I'm just going to the fridge. I'm just looking at kiwis there. Half of one of them kiwis now would be enough. If I take 2 or 3 spoonfuls out of that, it's enough. The apples, as you can see, they're all kids' little apples, and I will keep that, you know, as my piece of fruit. And
is this for lunch?
It could be at lunchtime, yeah, or I sometimes have fruit after my dinner. That'll keep you going for ages, just that little apple with probably a petit flou. That'll be lunchtime. I'm getting better now because I'm onto the bigger yogurts now, because that's kind of the main meal. I find that if I have a cereal in the morning, it's better because I've taken milk and it stops then the acid coming through the stomach sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see what's
3 months later, nearly 5 stone lighter, 4 foot 10 inches. 18 stone.
Yeah, I'm just going to the doctor here to have a monthly weigh-in to see how much I've lost and to get my bloods checked. Basically to know how much I've lost. I mean, you feel it, but to have it done officially and recorded officially that that I'm losing what I should be losing.
I think you are.
Or I'm not losing exactly. I hope so, yeah. I feel it. I definitely am.
How have you been since? Are you eating okay?
Yeah.
How's the weight going?
Well, I think it's going well. It's falling off. Okay.
Is it falling off?
Well, yeah, definitely.
That's great. Right. Okay, come on over.
So it's a month since you've been on the weighing scales, Liz.
Yeah.
So shoes off and we'll just step on the weighing scales now and hope for the best.
Okay.
Right. So it's 225 pounds. I'm just going to change that in stones. 16 stone, 1 pound. That's fantastic.
Brilliant.
That's the best ever.
It's 12 pounds.
For me, it's great. You know what I mean? But Liz is brilliant, like, she doesn't want to sit in anymore, she wants to go out all the time. We, like, we've been abroad, we've been in Leeds, we've been in Lanzarote, which we never went abroad before. You know what I mean? Even after our breakfast one morning, sitting having a bit of breakfast, she can't eat very much now because it's only a small portion. She's only full, she says, I have to go for a walk. That's the first time I've ever heard her saying that. She has to walk a bit of the field off her. So we walked up the promenade and all the way back, and that's, to me, that's great, you know. It's been great, yeah. Play for her, play for her.
It's pretty close. Oh god.
What kind of thing are you looking for?
60, so I'm looking for skirts. I just like nice skirts with a little bit of swing on me. But that's because I'm small, they're too long. Do you know what I mean? I'd spend more time cutting pieces off them than actually, you know, I'd get no value out of. Oh. Your mother's tablecloth. Look. Imagine wearing that. No, thanks. I know I'm trying to get into the fashion and all that. Today is the 23rd of April and it'll be 10 months. Yeah, because I've got to go for my yearly review there in June to go back over to Leeds and just see how everything is officially. Like, I mean, I know it's fine because I go for monthly checkups and I have my bloods checked and I have everything checked.
How's it been going over the past while?
Oh, it seems to have slowed down. You know, it gets to the stage that it slows and it's not like, you know, I would have been losing 10, 12 pounds a month. You know, now it's 6, 7 pounds. And at the moment, like, it's gone up 2 pounds, which is, well, I think after 10 months, it's not bad, 2 pounds. But I think, then again, I have been away on holidays and I have been, well, I don't think I've been eating different, but obviously not as exercising as much as you would now because of, you know, when you're at home, you're constantly, I find now that's great, I'm constantly on my feet, I'm constantly doing something, or I'm out in the garden, or I'm doing something. Obviously, when you go on holidays, you're, you know, you're sitting around, you're not exercising as much.
How would you describe yourself now?
Oh, well, I can see a difference between my chest and my waist. Like, I'm actually beginning to form a waist. Like, when I look down at myself, I can actually see, a dividing line. It's not all one piece of blubber. Actually, at the moment, because it's been really nice weather here and it's been nice everywhere, it's been nice to wear nice, bright clothes, and I felt actually quite sexy in them. And, you know, probably for the first time in my life last week, I actually went to the shop and these two builders actually gave me a wolf whistle, and I knew it wasn't anyone else. I was the only one there. But I just happened to be bending down to pick up a newspaper, so it was nice to know I had a cleavage. But I would say at the moment I can see a shape emerging that, you know, it's nice.
How would you distinguish between last year and now?
Well, last year I would have been in a size 30 to 32. Now I'm in, you know, between 60 and 18. And I can see that I have a, I don't know, for want of a better word, I can see that I've got the shape of a backside as well, you know, that I'm beginning to get a shape. There's definitely, you know, defining lines between, you know, bust and a waist appearing, you know, that way, which is great. I wrote myself a letter that night before the operation in June 2006. It was a letter to Liz. It's hard to think that in 4 days my life is about to change forever. My emotions are all over the place. I think I have relived my whole life, reliving and recalling past events, and all in all, though there are more highs than lows, even despite the abuse, I have come through this all despite the toll it's taken on my life and my health. I'm still here. I never wanted more so in my life. To live life to the full, surrounded by the love of my life, Kevin, and my great family and friends who are there for me now and have always been. I'm really glad I decided when I did to take stock of my weight and do something about it. I'm petrified that I won't come out of this operation and die. That's how it is when I'm at my lowest weighting. But I do have great faith in the man above that I will pull through. As I approach my 45th birthday, I will be well over the operation. And as a lot of women approaching middle age have crises, I feel that I will be beginning to live life as I always wanted, being seen as normal in everybody's eyes. This operation will change my life forever. I'm still going to be Liz Marie Stanley, but Liz Marie Stanley with a longer lifespan and became a happier, healthier person whose story and life experience will help and encourage some people to take that first step towards helping themselves. This time next year, I will say I've come a long way since then, and I'm getting ready to go to Leeds to have my yearly review, and I'll be half the woman I was going in 2006. It's a Celtic cross, you know, that way. There's different members of his family, obviously, names on it. And just his name. The fact that he was a parish priest and when he died. Big old-fashioned grave, which is all sunken and obviously neglected. There's obviously nobody. Maybe the family left to care for it. Doesn't look very... Well, neglected, I think, is the word it's put on it. The past, and it's well and truly buried now. Live in the present and look forward to the future.